Please sit down. We are about to start this session. Reclaiming positive leadership. That's why we're here and that's what we're about.
We want to welcome all of you. And what we're doing today is we're going to give a feedback on the PWA Summit Living 2008 that occurred 2 days before this conference. We're all glad you're here. We're going to present a number of findings and presentations and then open the floor for discussions, and we hope that there's a good, lively debate.
Good. So without further ado, we should get started.
So my first task is onerous. I have to introduce Yolanda Simon. I think that's enough because most people know her, but Yolanda is the CEO of the Caribbean Regional Network of People Living with HIV. She's a founding member of ICW, and she's just all around fabulous and has seen almost everything and anything to do with the positive networks. She's been instrumental in guiding GMP Plus in moving forward into the organization it is today, and I want to ask you to join me in welcoming Yolanda.
Okay, thanks a lot, everybody. I'm going to just briefly touch on the importance of reclaiming positive leadership. I know one of the things to me about this conference is that it's wonderful to see so many people that I know, but it would be more wonderful if we were not here anymore. We were somewhere else in the background, perhaps on a cruise, whilst the new wave of positive leadership takes up the mantle and continue forward. So, without further ado, I just want to share some thoughts with you because I am setting the stage for what we feel is going to be a very fruit and rich discussion. So, the first wave of positive leadership. The first wave was in the late 1980s when gay men took the lead. For example, gay men helped Crisis of New York. In 1983 to 1990, positive people started attending the International AIDS conferences. However, this was mainly from North America and Europe. The turn of the tide came in 1993 when the movement took the initiative and created a GNP Plus, finally a platform for positive persons everywhere. This is a quote from the former chair of GNP Plus, Ms. Dolores Dockery. She said, "The leadership of HIV-positive people since the beginning of the pandemic has challenged attitudes, changed laws, and advocated advances in treatment that are now saving millions of lives." Strong commitments have been agreed, and government leadership in the response is vital. Yet, too many have not been held accountable for the promises they have made. Nothing that we don't already know. The leadership of HIV-positive people since the beginning of the pandemic has challenged attitudes, changed laws, and advocated advances in treatment that are now saving millions of lives. I said that already. Yeah. I just want to make sure you're paying attention. Okay, now the first generation of activists, like many of you here in this room, well, not many of you here, but many of you are the first generation of activists, but some of us have died, and the ones that are still alive are close to burnout. With limited access to treatment services, people are reclaiming their lives and not interested in supporting the cause, but rather on others doing it on their behalf. There continues to be a subliminal crusade that works to ensure that the voices of positive people are silenced. In silencing the activists and the passing of a death sentence on activism as we know it, many groups have been created, some of which could be UN Plus, RCRC Plus, IPTC Plus. I ask you, has Paris burnt down? Is ACT UP dead? Is the new wave of internet advocacy the future? Within the positive community, little thought has gone into succession planning and sustainability of the movement. Why is it still important? Well, we know HIV is not going away anytime soon. It is important because people living with the disease should be involved and are essential to program planning, should be involved and implemental in the program planning process. No program has been successful and would be successful unless input is sourced from the people who are most affected and who the programs are created for in the first place. We need to give hope to the hopeless and voice to the voiceless. It is necessary to strengthen collaborations between people living with the disease and affected communities, as well as with governments and private sector, civil society organizations as well, so as to hone our multi-sectorial approach to the epidemic, as well as to ensure that all of us, are held accountable. We need the same kind of dynamic leadership today in 2008 to take the response to HIV and AIDS to the next level, so that universal access to prevention, treatment, care, and support can be realized, and incidence of HIV and AIDS can be reversed. Finally, we must continue to be the watchdogs for our communities. This is our raison d'etre. We must continue to strengthen the capacity of positive persons, ensuring that their voices are heard and listened to at every level, so that the vision of a world without AIDS will become a reality. Where do we go from here? I thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Yolanda, for setting the stage. I'm just going to take a few minutes now to talk about what we did and why we did it, in terms of, you know, getting together and talking about reclaiming our agenda. I'll give you a little story. When I was sitting in the office of a director of a UN agency, which I won't name at the moment, we were talking about testing. And I was telling this gentleman that a lot of African women are telling me that they're worried about provider-initiated testing and counseling, which means that when you go to your doctor, they'll give you an offer and they'll give you a test in the office without, you know, an option of opting out. And the African women were telling me that they're really worried because that has a lot of implications if they get a positive result. They go home and they disclose, and they have issues with violence, with losing their jobs, with losing their housing, with losing their children. And this very wise man said to me, but there is no evidence of that. And the issue was that in the literature, there is no evidence of that. So we started to think within the Living Partnership about, you know, what is important about, you know, gathering our stories in a way that speaks the language of policymakers so that they can take it as evidence. And so what we did was we started a consultation way back in January with people living with HIV, and we started to look at four themes. We looked at sexual and reproductive health and rights. We looked at criminalization, access to treatment, care, and support, and positive prevention. And these four themes were chosen because we thought that they were important and because we also thought that we could handle a maximum of four themes. And we started to consult with people living with HIV through working groups that dealt with these themes and also through people living with HIV networks. The reason is that no longer can we go to international organizations and to UN agencies and sit in their offices and have them say to us, there is no evidence. So this is the first step for us to try to get better at gathering your voices in a way that we can analyze it qualitatively and quantitatively and speak the language of policymakers and programmers. because we want to make sure that your voices and the voices of people are even harder to reach than you get to the level of policy. And no longer can we have things like the provider initiative testing and counseling go through just based on what's in medical literature. The 2 days that we had were really rich, and it was really important for us to be able to have those discussions, but we will continue to use the mechanisms that we've started to improve them to deal with these four subject areas, and also to think about including more subject areas, because I think it's important, instead of responding to a crisis, which, you know, a lot of activists are really good at, there's a crisis, we write letters, we fax things through, we have demonstrations. We need to be more proactive about gathering evidence and getting this information to people who can use it at regional, international, but also, very importantly, at national level. So the next few speakers will discuss various aspects of that. The first one is going to talk about the key messages that have come out of the Living Summit, the Living 2008 Summit. I don't really need to introduce him either, but I mean, that's what I'm here for. So our next speaker is Anwar Luna. He's the executive director of the Mexican Network of People Living with HIV/AIDS. He's the national focal point of REDLA, and he's a consultant on stigma and discrimination issues. So please join me in welcoming Anwar.
Thank you very much, and welcome to this session. Oh, it's going to be very stressing to try to synthesize two very exciting days of work that we had in the summit, but I will try to do my best. So, as a background, we met on the 31 of July and the August the 1st. We attended that meeting nearly to of 400 HIV-positive people from around the world. 88 countries were participating in the meeting. 5 continents were represented here in Mexico City. And the aim of this meeting was to set up a strategic agenda for a comprehensive response to the HIV and AIDS pandemic for the people living with HIV. As Kevin said, I will not repeat that. We have 4 thematic areas with the eye. But the thing that I can add is that we had 2 critical populations where we focus: women and vulnerable groups. But before that huge work, before those 2 exciting dates of work, there is a very, very exciting previous work that was made through the e-consultations. Those consultations starts between June and July of this year. Also, those consultations come from the development of the primary issues around each thematic area in a meeting that we held in Monaco in January of 2008, this year also. The development of the technical platform for e-consultations. We hold a primary e-consultations, but each working theme. We had group per team to develop a set of questions to kick off wider e-consultations. We hold wider e-consultations through the leadership of regional and international networks of people living with HIV. And at the end, we synthesize the discussions and present all that papers during the Living 2008. Now I will try to synthesize the key messages that come from each thematic group. The conclusion of the key messages from the Universal Access and Care and Treatment and Support thematic group was, people living with HIV, we see ACTS as the fundamental human rights and essentials to survivors. People living with HIV with proper ACTS can lead long, healthy, and social and economical productive lives. ACTS is effective prevention treatment as shows as reduction and new infections. ACTS saves lives and saves money, treatment is caused, as the Global Bank says, access keeps parents alive for maintaining the family unit. On criminalizations of the transmission, criminalization is counterproductive. Criminalization is not a solution. Criminalization will promote discrimination, which drives the transmission. Criminalization will increase stigma. People living with HIV do not want to transmit HIV. About sexual and reproductive health and rights for the people living with HIV, the rights to reproduction, sexuality, and the desire is fundamental. Articulating the sexual and the reproductive dreams and desires of the people living with HIV is fundamental. Linking HIV and the sexual and the reproductive health is part of the core business of the HIV community. A shared responsibility on prevention is needed. Challenging the changing of stigma and discrimination is crucial for the response. The key messages for the positive prevention table were: we also reduce HIV transmission, yet it's not exclusively about preventing HIV. We must link it with the access to treatment, care, and support. We have to link the human rights approach to combating stigma and discrimination because it's essential. We require to address the social vulnerabilities, such as poverty, food security, gender-based violence, xenophobia, and homophobia, and everyone has a role to play. And finally, I just want to share some voices from the participants. Living 2008 was an amazing and handover strengths, skills, and knowledge. It's always exciting to see new, young, energetic faces to take over the battle of the fight of the with passions. It is time to us to be at the center of the response to this epidemic instead of remaining the slyness of watching others determining our fate. For Mexican people living with HIV, our participation in all the aspects of the summit has been an instead and inspired and transforming learning experiences. I'm sorry for it. My mind is almost dry. So I just would like to share with you all that key points. Thank you.
There's no need to apologize. It's actually our fault because we're making you speak in English and we're making you speak in 5 minutes. So you did a very good job. Okay, the next set of speakers, three speakers, will talk about their experience as positive leaders, and they'll give you experiences from the field. The first speaker is Nicola Ritter, who is the founder and now the director of PILS, the main HIV and AIDS NGO in Mauritius. He's also involved at regional level as the president of the Indian Ocean Network of People Living with HIV, and he's also an NAP Plus board member and a Seduction International board member. So that everyone knows, he asked me to clarify that he's 40 and single. Please join me in welcoming Nicola.
Thanks, Kevin. Okay, thanks, Kevin. Hi, everyone. Yolanda wanted to bring us on a cruise, and talking about cruising, I've been through this International AIDS Conference in 10 years, and believe it or not, it's the first time I've got the opportunity to talk in one of it of them, so I'm a bit nervous about it, but let's go cruising to Mauritius. When I was asked to do this presentation about my experience in the field as a positive leader, I asked myself, what is it about positive leadership? Is it a positive environment I was involved in and I'm living with since 1994? So let me try to figure out. It's the left one, okay. So when I was detected positive in 1994, I was at the time a cabin crew for Air Mauritius, and, the positive environment is for me also the fact that, although I have a Mauritian father, I'm from Mauritius, I have a French mom that gave me the French nationality, and it was also very important at that time to be reassured that because this French nationality, I would have access to care and treatment in the island next to Mauritius, which is a French department, which is called Réunion Island. I never experienced stigma or discrimination from friends or family. I have fantastic parents and friends. But I had to leave Mauritius because a year after, in 1995, I had to start antiretroviral therapy. And in Mauritius, there was just nothing. No doctors, no medication. And Mauritius, well, is also a very positive environment. You know, when you live there, you don't really want to leave this island. So having to leave Mauritius, I've asked myself, like, two positive questions. It was, well, I'm lucky, but what about if my best friend is positive, is HIV positive? I can have treatment in Réunion Island. I mean, I've got fantastic parents, but, I mean, what for my best friend? And the second question was, okay, I'm on AZT. At that time, people were dying. There was only mono and bi therapy. And I said to myself, well, I have, what, 5-6 years to go, and what am I going to do with that, the rest of that life? So these questions inspired me to decide to launch PILS, this organization that I'm still in right now. For the first 5 years in Mauritius, we struggled a lot with the government, lots of advocacy, but although I was disclosing with my colleagues, friends, parents, and even the press, they always respect my wish to not go public. I wanted to, but maybe I had a few fears, internal ones especially. And it's after actually Trinidad conference where I had this wonderful workshop on internal stigma made by Kevin Moody and the Triangle Project at the time, I think. Yeah. Not Kevin Moody, Kevin Osborne, sorry, from IPPF. Kevin really showed me that, you know, and at that time I was back to Mauritius as a part-time crew. I didn't want to do that job, and I think that was the only reason why I didn't want to disclose publicly. But that year the government decided also to give free antiretrovirals to all Mauritians, so I decided that, well, you should talk about it. Look, we can live with them, this treatment. And so I was the first one to disclose my HIV status in Mauritius, followed a couple of years after by my brother-in-arms, Diren Moer. Dans la foulée, I would say in French, I launched the Mauritian Network of People with HIV. I joined NAPLUS as a board member. And recently, we networked all the islands of the Indian Ocean as a NAPLUS sub-region called Ravan, which is the Indian Ocean Network, Indian Ocean Island Network of People with HIV. Is positive leadership is about training? I believe so. You know, when you are, you learn about your HIV status, it's so important to be reassured. And my medical practitioner, Catherine Goh, she's also not only a fantastic practitioner, she's also the president and founder of RIVE Association, an organization of people living with HIV/AIDS, for people living with HIV and AIDS, a woman of great inspiration. This organization as well, we are working together, and they are doing a tremendous work, not only in Mauritius, but in all the Indian Ocean islands. My first training as a volunteer was also made by a fantastic man, Dr. Arnaud Marty-Lavoiselle, who passed away recently. We were very lucky and privileged to have the first training of volunteers by this amazing guy. I think this positive training is also coming from ongoing support from friends and family. Without that, it's difficult to carry on in the fight. The NAPLUS Ambassador of Hope training program, I think it's a fantastic one for positive leaders to speak out and to know how to deal with the press and the policymakers. I received a lot from you guys who are here this afternoon, from you guys here at the panel, from all those positive leaders I've met since 12 years all around the world and who teach me a lot. There's numerous of partners that I wish to also thank for this training they gave me. Style Action, Aide de Crips, SIDA Info Service in France. But I just want to say thanks today to ERASA, the Aid and Right Alliance of Southern Africa, who currently is giving me a fantastic training on human rights and HIV. Well, I'm not going through all the positive achievements we've done in Mauritius, actually, because there is quite a few and I've forgot a lot. But I think the thing we are the most proud in Mauritius it's of course the universal access to antiretroviral, but it is also to push the government for changing laws like the HIV/AIDS Act that at the beginning was criminalizing HIV, and we managed to change that and introduce needle exchange guidelines and put methadone in Mauritius. I don't know if you are aware and for those who follow this morning session at 7 o'clock, Mauritius is the second country in the world in terms of heroin consumption per habitant. That is 2% of the population. So the challenge there is just enormous regarding this issue. And with a team of people and the networking we managed to do locally and internationally, we're now addressing this issue. We also managed to change some discriminative laws regarding marriage for people with HIV who are not allowed to marry foreign people or whatsoever. There's lots of program I want to talk about, but I have only 5 minutes and it's difficult to go through all these. The positive tools that I have in my hand, because people say, oh wow, you did a fantastic job in Mauritius, that's amazing. Well, I started from scrap. There was nothing. So it's easy. You know, you have no competition. You have a kind of monopoly on HIV. But it's true that I had there in Mauritius some really positive tools like the media, press and radio that really supported our actions from the start. The local NGO that we networked with, the regional international ones, I name a few. All these conferences, people say, well, you are wasting such a lot of money in this conference, but I mean, that is really empowering, and I can tell that Mexico conference is one of my best. Internet now, I think, is a fantastic tool for us to advocate and to be in connection and try to lobby. Maybe the fact that I speak French and English in a bilingual island make it easy to communicate with my brothers and sisters in Africa. Some will say that my ability to speak both languages is a tool, but my blue eyes are another one. I don't think so. I think human rights, when you talk with your heart and when you believe in human rights, this is exactly what the approach you have to if you want to achieve positive things. And I'll come back again to love, care, and support, but because, again, burnout is very important in this field, and without support, there's no way you can carry on. So I came to the fire by accident. Like, you know, I don't think I would be there if I was not HIV positive. But I decided to go on that fight and still carry on, because these two positive questions I was asking to myself are still there. Why would happen for those who are not as fortunate as me in Mauritius, because we still have a lot of issues to deal with. And well, I don't know when I'm going to die, but I mean, I want to carry on some positive action for the rest of my life. So, yes, being HIV positive is a plus for the activism. Networking is for sure an essential key. Communication, a fantastic tool. Honesty, the rule. Passion, the fuel. And, well, I didn't think to be there after that long, so every day is a bonus and my life is so positive. Thank you, Gurmit, IES, for inviting me, and see you very soon.
Thank you, Nicola, for sharing with us your personal experience at country level. Our next speaker is also known to all of us. Violeta Ross is a rape survivor and living with HIV since 2000. She is an anthropologist by training and is currently representing the LAC NGOs in the UNAIDS PCB, which is the board of UNAIDS. Please join me in welcoming Violeta.
Okay, good afternoon. There is translation, right? Okay. So I am going to talk about some experiences of the Bolivian network of people living with HIV in a moment in which we decided to make our own research, because the AIDS policy making in Bolivia is based on anything but the needs of people living with HIV. So this produces a vicious cycle of no data, no policies, no political will, and then it goes again and again. So we couldn't stand that anymore, and we decided to do our own research on the needs of people with HIV. We decided to do this in a way that was participatory, because many of the persons living with HIV in Bolivia don't have literacy, and not everyone is are trained on public speaking or writing. We did something that we call the health journey. We asked them, how would it look like if you had to draw a journey from your situation of being a person with HIV to a moment in which you reach health? And the results of that research, then we made a priority of problems and we proposed some solutions to the government. This was a groundbreaking experience in Bolivia, because it put the persons with HIV in Bolivia in a position that we could be researchers, not only beneficiaries, or not only the testimonial of living with HIV, but we could do research that could then influence policy making. This kind of research was never done before in Bolivia. Some people with HIV, when they made the drawings, they saw themselves in a mirror, and they were so angry. They said, we can no longer stand this. In one of the cities, Santa Cruz, they took the government into a national kind of a jury, using the constitution, because the children were not accessing medications. What we expect this research to do in the future, we want to update this because it's a baseline. We want to continue making research on areas that we know are not better understood in the epidemiological background, whatever. That is, for example, the needs of children, people who are living in the rural areas, and young people. And at the end, we want a person living with HIV as the coordinator of the National AIDS Program. In Bolivia, the laws will say that that person has to be someone from the medical background. So some of our members are studying medicine so that they can get the certificate and then become the National AIDS Coordinators. And I will show you now one of the maps that we did in Bolivia. I had a PowerPoint presentation, but I don't know where is it. Which? Okay. Violeta.
Is that who you
are? I think so. Okay. This is the whole map. It's in Spanish. I hope you can see from the back. It says in the name of this map is "What Do We Want?" And this map was made by people with HIV from Cochabamba, one small, well, not so small city, which is in the center of Bolivia. This is the whole map so that you see. I will pass by in close-ups. So in this first part, they are saying everything begins with the question, am I living with HIV or not? Remember, the people here are responding to my question. I told them, get in groups and then draw the situation that you face here in Cochabamba, the city in which they did this. Well, you have money for the HIV test or not. Maybe you go with counseling, consejería, that means counseling, or not. Some people have that, some not. Anyway, they pass through all these groups. In the upper part, it says groups of people with HIV, NGOs, and the church. And this is good because it brings the levels of discrimination down. And there is emotional support, psychological support, medical care and information. We have two good doctors, but there are many people living with HIV around them. Some of them are women, some of them are bisexual, some of them are men, and some of them are living with HIV, but these doctors also take care of the general public. So up there, one of the doctors is saying, they are too many, help. So because of this, we are still afraid of going into the hospital. This is a hospital, a hospital that we know because they discriminate people with HIV. And meanwhile, we don't have the results of our tests, CD4 and viral load. And there is the activist saying, where are my results? And there is the National AIDS Program coordinator saying, this is the request number 20 that I already sent. And his answer is, I already made the request. It's not my fault in a way. They are trying to express the bureaucracy of the Bolivian government in delivering care. And this is a lot of bureaucracy, and with these kind of lines, they try to express the insecurity of the care for people with HIV. Meanwhile, the Global Fund and the Ministry of Health, those who have the ARVs are sleeping together with our medications. And our blood is getting ruined, you know, all the insects around, because it has been so long since they took our blood and we don't have the results. And this is what the colleagues in Bolivia did. We presented this to the National AIDS Coordinator and we gave a copy to the health Minister of Health, and really the simplicity of the drawings was like a slap for them in their faces. And we made the point that people with HIV are not stupid, they know their needs, but maybe they are not being listened to, and I think every person can do this. These methodologies are used by anthropologists in communities that don't have literacy. So we don't have to have a training in the university. We can make this kind of research to influence policies. And this is an example of how we can reclaim our rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Violeta. I think it's, you know, sometimes at this level, and especially when we're walking around, we're, you know, looking at studies and we're listening to data and we're trying to interpret the results of clinical trials. And I think once in a while, it's good to be reminded that people's stories can be turned into evidence without needing to get into that kind of scientific process. Thank you for sharing that with us. Our last speaker on this particular topic about, you know, local leadership is Frika Chia Iskander, who's from Indonesia. She's the coordinator of the Women Working Group of Asia Pacific Network of People Living with HIV and AIDS, which is WAPN+. She's a regional PLHIV network. It's a regional PLHIV network, which is based in Bangkok. She has been involved in HIV/AIDS issues since 2002, and she was a positive speaker in seminars and conferences. The last big speech we might all remember was when she was giving the moving speech at the opening ceremony at the 17th International AIDS Conference in Toronto. I certainly remember that speech. Frika was involved in the research of human rights violation documentation in Indonesia and collaborates with APM+. In addition, she was involved in many community mobilization networks such as ITPC. And we all know Frika. Please give her a warm welcome. Thank you.
I always do this. Yeah. Thank you. And I don't actually prepare any presentation, but. So good afternoon, everyone. So here I would like to share my personal experience on what so-called being positive leaders. Well, one of the things that I always ask myself is am I a leader? Or because if I want to see my, if I'm a leader, I don't want to forget that as a leader, I'm actually a bridger. I want to make sure that I don't forget that I represent a lot of other people, voices in the community, other people living with HIV. And one of the challenges that I want to bring up here is about the issues when me, as a people living with HIV or women living with HIV, being representative. And a lot of the time, we are being asked or invited as being representative in a lot of decision-making body. And for me, sometimes that freaked me out, not because my name is Frika, but that's really freaked me out. Because, you know, that's a lot of responsibility. A lot of responsibility in a way that, one, can I make sure that I actually represent a lot of other people's voices? Is the platform there? Second is, not only that, do I have enough authority if I sit there? Will people who invited me to sit on the body give me the authority to make changes? So these are the things that I usually ask myself. If it's not there, I usually don't take it. Because for me, that's too much burden. But in a way, I actually let the opportunity slip away to actually make changes, to actually give something, maybe just a voice of people living with HIV. But, you know, sometimes for me, even like I sit there, represent people living with HIV, I get the burden of other people in the community asking me, what are you doing there? Are you actually representing my voice? I don't feel that you represent my voice. You know, so that kind of questions also like come back to me. And it's like fired back. And for me, that's, man, that's too much. And sometimes we do this for volunteer basis. So, one of the things that I would like to talk about here is the important elements of being positive leaders. Is one, willingness of voicing out others' positive people voice or community voice. And not only having the willingness, it's also about having the right attitude. The right attitude of saying, it's not only about me, but it's also only about other people. And we actually fight for it, having the right attitude. If the organization invited us to represent, for them to give us the mechanism of the platform for me to communicate with other people, or to make sure I have enough time to communicate to other people, to have the consultations. If it's not there, I have to give the attitude, the right attitude to those people in the organization. Sometimes I have to be strong there. And maybe they think that, oh, you know, you can be bitchy, but yeah, I have to do that. And I'll have to have the platform for communication and the critical mass where people, the critical thinking, where people can exchange their ideas, exercise the rights to ask and speak for themselves. And where there, I can actually collaborate all the things and then bring the issues up. And this, all of the things are actually based on my experience being involved in the Commission on AIDS in Asia, where I actually asked to sit to represent people living with HIV. It's an ad hoc independent body to see the socioeconomic impact of Asia. And it was like 9 members, and I was the only positive representative. And for me, like, it's sitting with all the professors, all the researchers, epidemiologists, I freaked out. I got nervous. I felt like, oh, I'm the only one, and I have to take all the responsibility. So with that 18 months, within that 18 months, we created, I took a lead on the project on consultations, making sure that the voices are heard, where we actually had the face-to-face consultations with civil society members and also e-consultations. It's like an online survey, because one of the important point here that actually helped me with the online consultation survey. I only had 1 month at the time, and I had to make sure how can I reach as many people as possible in 1 month in Asia, all over Asia. And so this online survey came into the horizon, and we did that, the online survey, which we got around 600 people contributed on the online survey. So when I sat there back into the room with this all academic background people, I represent these 600 people, and I felt more confident, and that actually means a lot to me. Besides the online survey, we also did the key informant interviews, because sometimes from that findings, I didn't have enough, I want to know more. So we did the key informant interviews also. So that's actually my experience, which has been documented. This is the book. It's called When Ask Communities Answer. Why the book is called When Ask Communities Answers? Because sometimes communities don't answer, and I have to live with that, and we know. Sometimes don't answer. When we send emails to mailing lists, there's this fatigue. There's this fatigue things that people, it's too much work. People sometimes don't see emails when, you know, they're in mailing lists. There's just too many things happen. So I want to make it more positive thinking. So it's called When Ask, Communities Answer. That's all. Thank you. I don't have a lot on this book. We only have 500 copies in this conference. But if you want to download, you can download it at the fpnplus.org. fpnplus.org. Thank you.
Thank you, Frika. I think the last three presentations gave us different views of positive leadership in the local level. We saw, you know, somebody who started something where there was absolutely nothing. We saw somebody else who was working with people who didn't have a voice to try to find a way to get them to be able to express themselves to policymakers. And Frika just explained, and I'm looking around the room at a lot of positive leaders, the discomfort around trying to be representative. And how do you do that in a way that's accountable to your constituents? And I think that the more and more we go through this, we have to try to find ways in which to support positive leaders, but at the same time realize that, you know, there's a cost to people's times in helping to do these consultations. So it's a very difficult question. But thank you, all three. The next two presentations will be talking about the implementing JIPA and developing positive leadership issues and challenges. And our first speaker is Philippa Lawson. Philippa has more than 21 years of experience working in HIV prevention, treatment, care, and support since she found out of her HIV positive status in December 1986. She is the H&E Senior HIV Advisor, E&E, Regional Coordinator at Constella Futures, a founding board member of the Global Fund, and a longtime member of ICW and GMP. Please join me in welcoming Philippa.
Thank you. I first want to tell you all I'm very humbled to be up here and a bit intimidated, because I see many of you that I have learned so much from, and any one of you could be up here. So bear with me. It's just 5 minutes, and you can hopefully have a chance to comment afterwards, but I did want to thank you. The other reason why it's so important, you know, I do live in the United States, but, you know, I had to move to a place to take care of my mother about 5 years ago. And I don't know one other person who's HIV positive. I have tried to go to a HIV support group, but they told me because I wasn't any longer on drugs and I wasn't homeless any longer, it really wasn't appropriate for me to join it. So you are mean a lot to me, and I thank you for listening to me talking about that I don't have sex and I don't have this and I don't have that, because this is the only time I can share it. So that to me is a lot of leadership. So most of you know the challenges, and I'm not going to go through them because you all could have them, and there's a copy of this you can get downloaded from the AIDS 2008. We have societal barriers, vulnerability, food, poverty, different issues of education, criminalization of HIV. Just wanted to share a young man here from Nepal who I learned a lot from. He was one of the first, open about his status in Nepal. Unfortunately, he had an alcohol problem, and he didn't speak English. So because he was the first openly positive person, they put him on the CCM. And he was a leader because he was open about his status, but he wasn't functional at all on the CCM. And in fact, the government would pay him money, transportation money, and he wanted to keep being on the CCM so he could use it for drinking. Meanwhile, the other positive leaders wanted to get him off the CCM because they felt others. So this is sort of a challenge we have to deal with. I went around and asked my colleagues, how do you see leadership? Because I actually see leadership quite differently. And they said that collectively and individually, no hay traducción, no? Sí hay traducción, es mejor? Okay. That we need to agree on something. An ability to lead and to be self-critical, not just personally about my own issues. So I do want to hear criticism, and I do appreciate when you give me feedback, even though my esteem might be a little shaky. This is a picture from Monaco, and you all know, because you're all in the room, that we are everything. We have HIV, but listen, that's just a little blood virus. I have, like, many other viruses. Plus, I have much more than HIV. I have my culture, I have my education, I have my experiences. And that's strength, but it also can be weaknesses, as we saw from the summit, that even geographically we don't all agree. So people say there's not new leaders, and I actually disagree. I'm very fortunate. I actually think the new leaders are smarter, wiser, and more intelligent than me. They know not to waste their time up here. You know, they're out there. These are new leaders out there serving their communities. They also don't have email internet. Some of them can't read and write, but they're out there, and we're different. As you see from this photo, actually, this is the Ukrainian network, Volodya and Arena, and they're standing. They have direct phone call conversations with the president of Ukraine. That's how powerful they are in Ukraine. But at the same time, on a different level, if you look below that, that's from Hyderabad. That's a group of women just giving income support and trying to teach other women how to feed themselves. That's a leader to me. On the other one, that's HIV-positive teachers from Kenya teaching each other education, trying to teach each other about how to prevent HIV. And lastly, that's a demonstration in Nepal of drug users and positive drug users saying we want DFID to support ARVs. I've been asked to say, how do you measure it? Obviously, if we commit to something, I need to follow through. That's my basic example. Also, we need to remember that leaders are leaders, and it's not very much different than any leaders, whether it's a community leader or a government leader. But please don't expect us all to do this process. I do not like to argue. I do not like to sit on the Global Fund. I do not like to do that. Why do I do that? Is because my friends are dead, and I feel like an obligation. But you all have different motivations of why you do that. And we all don't have to be a leader on the same level or do it the same way. But we need to remember that we're dealing in a reality of constant government change. And we're constantly changing. This is Kenya's sort of old government, and now you have heard about their new government. And this is also the Ukrainian revolution, the Orange Revolution. Why this is important is if we target our activities at government officials, 6 months later, they're changed. I worked in Nepal, and every 2 months I'd come back, I was speaking to a different director general. By the third year, I was speaking to the same director general that I spoke to 2 years ago. But, you know, we're trying to change policy on a national level, and if they keep changing, then we have to change our advocacy. So then we went on a local level directly to drug users. I want to highlight that I think it's very unfair that we have expectations, because we're living with HIV, that we think that we should do all when most people in this field outside of you all who are volunteers are paid. And I think there's an unfair expectation of those of us who volunteer. And I think we need to keep that in account. But at the same time, I do think we need to remember that not all of us can get paid. And so that is quite a challenge. And if we do get paid, then we need to follow through. And if we can't follow through, then we need to get out of our jobs. If you're given money from a grant and you can't follow through, whether you're positive, negative, or not, I'm sorry, you're taking up other people's jobs and you need to get out of it, because there's thousands and thousands of us who could do the job. As you can see, I'm quite passionate about that because I've experienced that. So, you know, leadership, we do have to hold each other accountable. And I hope you hold me accountable, as many of you have, as you yelled at me. But we also need to remember our different education levels. In Ukraine, they're adamant that they don't have a university degree. And they want a university degree because they can't get employed, even in their own all-Ukrainian network of positive people, because they've received the Global Fund funds. Now, you see, I don't have a university degree, and many of you might be amazed at that. In fact, my job thinks I have a PhD, and they keep asking me, what degree do you have? What degree do you have? And I don't lie, but I don't answer, you see. So they'll know from this that I don't have a degree. But the thing is, we can be smart and intelligent, just like Violetta said. You know, if we know our power... No, seriously, some of us, I do want to get paid and go back to school, but the United States is too expensive. I'd love a degree. I'd love to stop, but I have to take care of my mother, so I can't do that. But at the same time, a lot of us have the power, and don't limit ourselves. I was told I had 6 months to live. So if you've been told you have 6 months to live and you're 22, you can do anything because you know you're going to die in 6 months. It's 21 years later, but I'm still living like that. And you too can live like that also. So now that we're living, I want to show Mauro's baby and a baby in a little village in Kenya, and also a Ukrainian baby. We have lives, and this is really the dilemma I'm at as a leadership, and some of you might. With ARVs, though I'm not on ARVs, but because I'm the only child that doesn't have children, I need to take care of my mother who's alone. So while I'm here, my mother's not being taken care of. And that's really stressful for me. And while Mauro's here, his baby, he's not with his newborn baby. And I think we need to also accept that leadership, we don't have to now kill ourselves. I don't know. I really don't know what to do with this. And that's why I say accountability to whom? I have not been accountable to my family, and I feel like I'm doing an awful job. And that really is stressful. So thank you. I believe a leader always has to learn, and I've learned from all the panelists here. And if I stop learning and I become arrogant, please tell me, because I really do want to open a coffee shop. Gracias.
Thanks, Philippa. That means you're going to have to move to Amsterdam to open a coffee shop. Welcome. Okay, our next speaker is also known to you. It's Javier Horcad Belloc. He's the LAC regional representative of the International HIV/AIDS Alliance. He's also a board member now representing you in the community's delegation at the Global Fund. Please join me in welcoming Javier.
Buenas tardes a todos. I will speak in English because people do not pick up headsets. So I think it's important to start with the question how we define leadership. And I think all of us, all people are leaders. And I think we use this term because it's about empowerment. But the problem with leadership is like with beauty. There are people that believe they are more better leaders than others. And I think that's where we start with problems. And like fashion models or rock stars or movie stars, they believe that there is no a single event that could be successful without them. So that's when we start having problems about leadership. And I think, at least from the region where I come from, Latin America and the Caribbean, the Global Fund and Angas meeting is a good example. People kill and die to attend this kind of meeting. They don't have a clue, probably, what are the documents to be discussed. And I'm generalizing, and generalizing is always unfair. But trust me, emails and e-forums are burning before any of those events, as well as International AIDS Conference, because people feel and believe that they should be there, and not, of course, no one else, because, I mean, they will take in the seats of someone else. And in this regard, the same happens in Latin America and the Caribbean about the abuse of capacity building and workshopping. I think that there is many PLHA leaders who have been attending the same repetition of workshops and capacity building sessions without even telling their agencies and international NGOs, you know what, you already trained me on that. Let's move on another topic. And more serious than that, we have been trained without asking or demanding money to implement what we have been trained on. So, I mean, we are, in some way, we are repeating the same vicious circle, and we attend workshops, we attend conferences, we attend high-level meetings, and what we do with all this information, if we have information, what we do with that. And I think Global Fund is an example and poses a special challenge. People living with HIV and AIDS are at the CCM, and I think this is a successful story of our movement. We get a quota there. There is no a single country that could submit a proposal without people living with HIV and AIDS in the CCMs. And I think we should thank GMP+, ICWU, and people in this table who have fought for that, for become this as a policy, that there is not a single Global Fund grant without PLHA involvement. But then, of course, pose the challenge that people living with HIV and AIDS are sitting in the CCM, and accountability, communication, and consultation. How they do that? How they prevent themselves to become friends of the government instead of keeping defending the issues of their constituency? Rotation. And the same happened with the TRIPS. People who are members of the CCM believe that the Global Fund grants will fail if they move away from the CCM and a new people with HIV and AIDS replace them after 2 years. And GMP and ICWU already, and other projects, already developed good practice guidelines. Those people never access to these kind of documents. Ethics. I think some people of our constituencies and some colleagues are the first who challenge some basic ethics principles about, for example, conflict of interest. And of course, internal division. I mean, it's very difficult for us to be a movement at the national level when we fight each other to be part of the national delegation of the ANGAS meeting or of the CCM. And I think that we should honor this position, and we should, as Philippa rightly said, we should assess, evaluate, measure, and we all should set up for ourselves key performance indicators. It's not only about key performance indicator for the executive director of the Global Fund. It's about us at the CCM level, at the regional meetings, at the Global Fund board meeting. And I think the issue about new and emerging leadership is an issue that we have been talking for a while, and I have been living and working on HIV/AIDS for the last 20 years, and I think I started hearing that 10 years ago, so I mean, something is going wrong. But there is some positive things coming across. I'm in my country, Argentina, in the Argentinian Red Cross, currently there's 600 leaders, positive leaders, within the Argentinian Red Cross movement. So I think there is, to give you one single example, and I think there is many positive things happening in our movement that we should not underestimate. Our movement usually, in the last more than 20 years, have used two mottos, and I will be twisting to close my remarks with twisting those mottos or slogans. Remember that we have been saying with different words that nothing about us or for us without us. But I think some leaders have been taking this very seriously because they're thinking that us is themselves. I mean, any consultation or any conference could not happen without themselves, name and surname. And to end that, I think that if we don't move forward the rhetoric about new leadership, I think the old leaders, we will be part of the problem and not part of the solution. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Javier. The last two presentations looking at challenges around leadership, and it was really clear from both
that there are a lot of challenges around how do we maintain and sustain leadership in the current state. And there was a lot of optimism as well around, you know, new leaders and different types of leadership, leadership on the ground, leadership in communities and at the global level. Javier started to talk a little bit about holding ourselves accountable, and that the next two presentations will discuss that in more detail about how do we ensure accountability for positive leadership. Our first presenter is Belinda Tima. She is the ICW UK board co-chair. She's worked with many organizations in the UK and internationally, and she's been committed to addressing the needs of people living with HIV. She's been involved in challenging criminalization. She remains committed to ensuring that human rights, leadership, governance are paramount. And one of the most important things for her is that the democratic process is included in the work that we do. She's worked at Positively Women and has evaluated the National HIV Prevention Program with the University College in London. She's also part of Press Gang at the National AIDS Trust, and she's a Sophia advocate. And in her free time, she's an international performing artist. Please join me in welcoming Belinda.
Thank you very much, Kevin, and all the participants and people. Let me bend down a little bit. And everyone who is attending this event today. Kevin, that was a really very nice and kind introduction of myself. As we've already heard from what many of the speakers have highlighted about the challenges, the needs, and also the barriers that many people living with HIV face on a daily basis to ensure that the voices, the human rights, governance, accountability, transparency is put across in a way that we all feel responsible and we feel that we relate to and have ownership, it's always been a question. It's been an institutional question, it's been an organizational question, and also amongst ourselves as leaders, if we call ourselves leaders, and the people that we relate to or people that we present. I will go very quickly, I won't talk so much, but I'll relate this in regards to what ICW is currently doing to ensure positive leadership. ICW has been established since 1992, and it has membership globally. It has many partners across the globe, and it works with many organizations in addressing the issues that we believe is core to the well-being, human rights, dignity of women. Ensuring positive leadership starts from how we understand that. It's already been explained. Institutional leadership is very important, and that reflects very much as to how we as organizations in the field also relate that in our work. At ICW, we believe that people, women, and people at the grassroots are very important and core in informing what our work and deliverables are. So to ensure that the leaders and people who represent the voices right directly from the ground is very, very important. We're currently undergoing a 5-year strategic review process, and that includes organizational reconstruction. This includes recruitment, building up of capacity of staff, and also recruitment of senior staff members, and also specializing in specific areas whereby we can tackle that in a capacity that is rightfully equipped to address issues as such. For example, we are looking at investing in expanding our advocacy management team. And this is a process towards ensuring accountability and following up on programs, processes, and projects that we aim to put out and how we also collaborate with partners and such. We are also looking at a wider consultation to reach out to our members. Over the years, we have lost many members, we've lost friends, and we've also lost addresses, and people have been misplaced in the various social capacities. What we are looking to do is to reach our people and everyone else who is a member or potential member who can join the organization, and then we are seeking their advice, their input in informing the vision of ICW for the next 5 years. This is because we realize that there are lots of changes in the field. HIV is not the same anymore. Therefore, we have to ensure that we are walking, we are going towards the right direction. This consultation will last 12 months, and this will basically highlight our lines of authority, how we interact, how we communicate with our partners, what our culture currently looks like and what it will look like in the next coming 5 years. Examples of ensuring positive leadership accountability has been seen, and we have evidence in a couple of countries at grassroots level. For example, Positively Women, ICW has a Positively Women Monitoring Change Toolkit. This toolkit is used by Positive Women to follow up on programs implemented by their governments. This is part of accountability to the organization, to its members, and to partners, and how we follow up on programs that we advocate for in a country and at a national level. And the second bit is policy input and dialogue. ICW has been working with Positive Women in three countries on a pilot project, and this has been to enable women at grassroots to level up and advocate directly with their member of parliament to address the issues that affect them, and not to send every time a researcher or someone else who would basically summarize huge amounts of data to inform policies at all times. This has been successful, and ICW looks to expand its work on that. Some of the challenges have already been highlighted by quite a couple of the speakers on here. Within the institution itself, there's still fragmented approaches as to how we communicate, how we link up services, and how we link up programs. And recently, there has been quite a lot of meetings amongst the institutions to explore ways of strengthening that, and also to identify weaknesses, gaps, and how that can be bridged. Again, some of the challenges we face in ensuring positive leadership accountability is the human resources. The human resources capacity within the field is an issue, because as much as we want clear representation, we want accountability, and we want the professional skills and capacities to follow that, at the same time, the industry trains, mentors, and exposes, as well as provides the platform for many positive leaders, but very easily they get snatched out, and they're not within the industry. This is an issue that we need to work on. And also another issue that's been mentioned by one of the speakers is the lack of basically pay or pay against voluntary work. You find that in most of the organizations or the boards and decision-making platforms, most of the people on the board are there. They have to commit their time. They have to conduct major research and also to make decisions that has to reflect and reflect their organizational capacities. And this has not been very possible. However, ways in which this can work is that once organizations, organizations that are working to strengthen capacity leadership within the field can build up and strengthen their information sharing, leadership development programs, and also support democratic and transparent processes to enable new leaders to come on board and enable collective and unified voice. Thank you.
Thank you, Belinda. Sorry for trying to keep everyone on time. I want to make sure we have enough time for discussions. Our last speaker is Pablo Ana Maria. He has been an HIV-positive activist for the last 15 years. He's the former focal point and board member of REDLA, and he is the former president of the Peruvian PLHIV Association. He's the associate director of advocacy of AIDS for Aid for AIDS. Please join me in welcoming Pablo Ana Maria.
Buenas tardes a todos y todas.
Good afternoon, everybody.
He pedido a Violeta que me ayude con la traducción.
I asked Violeta to help me with translations.
Porque me di cuenta que no todos habían traído sus auriculares.
Because none of you has a headset.
Durante más de 20 años, las personas con VIH,
for more than 20 years, persons with HIV,
hemos luchado para tener una voz.
We have fought to have a voice.
Así que en esta tarde voy a ser la voz de los hispanoparlantes que no están aquí.
So in this afternoon I will be the voice of those who speak Spanish who are not here.
Hay dos preguntas que me hago desde que llegué.
There are two questions that I made myself since I came here.
La primera tiene que ver con que he escuchado a líderes políticos de todos los países hablar con las mismas palabras que nosotros hablamos.
The first one is that I heard many politicians speaking with the same words that we use.
Hablan de luchar contra la homofobia, de acceso universal, de acción universal ya.
They speak about fighting against homophobia, universal access, universal action now.
Finalmente, creo que le quitan contenido a nuestra palabra.
At the end, I think they take the essence of our words.
Me pregunto cómo este movimiento de personas con VIH,
I question myself how this movement of persons with HIV,
va a responder con un nuevo discurso.
Will respond with a new discourse.
Un discurso beligerante.
A discourse that is groundbreaking.
Un discurso de diálogo respetuoso, pero también de continuar con nuestras luchas.
A discourse that has that shows respect, but also keeps our issues on the fight.
La segunda pregunta tiene que ver con cuáles son nuestros compromisos.
The second question has to see with which are our commitments.
Nosotros le pedimos a los demás que rindan cuentas.
We ask them, others, to be accountable.
Pero ¿quién nos pide cuentas a nosotros de los compromisos que hemos asumido, si es que los hemos asumido?
But who is making us accountable on the commitments we have made, if we made any?
Este movimiento no puede ser una élite de algunos líderes iluminados.
This movement cannot be the elite of some illuminated leaders.
Tiene que ser un movimiento para cada persona viviendo con VIH.
It has to be a movement for every person living with HIV.
Alrededor de estas preguntas,
And on these questions, I see.
Quiero presentarles una iniciativa en América Latina.
I want to present an initiative in Latin America.
Que tiene que ver con cómo se gasta el dinero del Fondo Mundial.
That has to see on how the money of the Global Fund is spent.
En todo momento nos dicen que el dinero del Fondo Mundial es nuestro.
In every moment they say the money of the Global Fund is ours.
Pero ¿cuánta gente con VIH viviendo en los pueblos humildes sabe que ese dinero es suyo?
But how many people living with HIV, living in the small villages, know that money is theirs?
¿Cuánta gente sabe cómo se invierte ese dinero?
How many people know how that money is invested?
Nosotros hemos desarrollado,
we have developed,
el Observatorio Latino.
The Observatorio Latino is like an oversight committee for the Global Fund in Latin America.
Este observatorio pretende reunir información desde las personas con VIH.
This observatorio is aimed to collect information from people with HIV
y de las comunidades,
and from the communities,
sobre cómo se están implementando los programas,
about the implementation of the programs,
a cuánta gente está llegando el dinero,
to how many people this money is actually reaching.
Esta información la llevamos al Fondo Mundial.
This information we take to the Global Fund.
De hecho, tenemos estatus de observadores en las reuniones de la Junta del Fondo.
In fact, the Observatorio Latino is an official observer in the board meetings of the Global Fund.
Y somos un punto focal regional de comunicaciones de la delegación de las comunidades.
And we are a focal point for communications for the communities delegation in the Global Fund.
Los principales desafíos que hemos encontrado,
the main challenges we found,
es que las personas con VIH están más ocupadas implementando proyectos,
is that people with HIV are more busy implementing projects,
que haciendo vigilancia de cómo se usa el dinero,
than overseeing how the money is spent.
Nos hemos convertido en gerentes.
We are now like managers.
Lo cual no es malo.
This is not bad.
Pero no podemos olvidar que somos activistas también.
But we should not forget we are activists also.
El segundo desafío,
the second challenge,
es la representación.
Is the representation.
¿A quién representamos?
Who do we represent?
¿Qué voz estamos llevando a los MCP?
Which voice are we taking to the CCMs?
En muchas oportunidades,
in many opportunities,
los representantes de las personas con VIH,
the representatives of persons with HIV,
levantan su propia voz.
They raise their own voice.
Pero no hay mecanismos claros,
but they don't have clear mechanisms,
para que el ciudadano de a pie,
so to have the voices of the people who are there,
vaya a altos niveles.
People who are on the streets, who need the programs, goes to the board or the CCMs.
Quiero retomar finalmente la pregunta de Yolanda.
Finally, I want to retake the question of Yolanda.
¿A dónde vamos desde aquí?
Where do we go from here?
Vamos a terminar siendo un movimiento dormido en viejas glorias.
Are we going to be a movement who is like sleeping in old victories?
¿O nos vamos a adaptar y vamos a generar nuevas victorias?
Or are we going to adapt and generate new victories?
Gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Those last two presentations were really important for us to be able to see how people living with HIV can be accountable for what they do for each other and for other people living with HIV. Our last speaker is the Deputy Vice President of the Ford Foundation, Jacob Gale. Please join us. Jacob is going to talk to us from the perspective of an outsider, and I put this in quotes because I don't think anyone thinks of Jacob as an outsider, and he's going to talk about evolving JIPA from involvement to investment.
No. Este es solo mío. Muy buenas tardes y also good afternoon to everyone, and I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here. And I don't want to say a whole lot because I think really the essence of what needed to be said has been said by my friends and colleagues in an amazing way. I just wanted to really lend my own solidarity and support and that of my institution. You know, for many of us who have been partners in this struggle against HIV for longer than we can really recall, a lot of the transition that has occurred in the response to HIV, we know is completely, completely attributed to the kind of leadership that's represented here, the kinds of individuals who, despite all of the other kind of challenges that they might have in their own personal, family, and community lives and circumstances, cared enough about all of us to take a leadership role, represent all of us in the struggles, locally as well as globally. And so I thank you all for really representing me. You know, in 1983, someone at a conference in Washington, D.C., came up with the bright idea that perhaps we should have people who themselves are living with HIV more prominently involved in the response. So that at that time, of course, where so few people really knew somebody with HIV, that the person who was willing to speak out on behalf of all would become the face of the epidemic. And as we know, one of the greatest successes in responding to HIV is the fact that when people who live with HIV are actually part of that response, it does become more salient, it does become more real. What unfortunately we didn't account for back in 1983 and 84 and 84 was how much of a token that individual becomes when in fact they're put forward as almost the poster child, just so that people can see what someone looks like. And they look like what? They look like you, they look like me. And really not taking into account the needs of that person, himself or herself, and the community from which they come. And so I think it was because of that and a few other reasons, the activism of people living with HIV that really changed the whole scope of public health, changed the whole scope of how we responded societally. You know, at one point, folks living with HIV were tearing down the doors of institutions like the World Bank and the Centers for Disease Control and NIH, and then shortly thereafter were being invited to be members of the board of trustees of top pharmaceutical companies. That did not just happen by chance. That happened by commitment, by activism, by determination that one was going to take responsibility for one's own fate and one's own destiny. And so in 1994, when 24 countries came together in Paris to declare a commitment to and about people living with HIV, the JIPA commitment, as many of us know, it really was something that was not born by those of us who cared from the side, but was really born through the struggles and the commitments of those who are within, people living with and people affected by HIV directly.
Now, JIPA really did take all of us into a different kind of a level of engagement of people with HIV, and yet still, it wasn't such that really prepared people for the kind of leadership that they were now being exposed to, now being propelled into. And so oftentimes, organizations felt very proud, patted themselves on the back, because they have a person living with HIV at the table, and yet never really provided the kind of support and investment in that individual to ensure that she or he could really play an equal role at the table with all of his or her partners. And so I think that's why we find ourselves right now, again, redefining what JIPA means when we talk about greater involvement of people with HIV. In fact, we really should be talking about a greater investment in people who are living with HIV to not only ensure that they really are able in these kinds of situations to be true leaders on par with everybody, but really to ensure that as we live our lives on a day-to-day basis, that the fact that one person has HIV and one person does not should make no difference in the societies and the cultures and the worlds in which we live. So what does that mean? Universal Declaration of Access to Care, Treatment, and Prevention. If people living with HIV are able to live longer and to live healthier and to be able to expect a future, what is a future if an individual cannot access human rights, human dignities, opportunities for sustaining oneself, for passing on inheritance to one's family, and to really contributing to one's society and one's culture? And so all of that to say is that the whole new paradigm of being able to ensure that the investment that we make in ourselves, our neighbors, and our communities is one that is based upon a human rights perspective, a respect for the fact that we truly are equals, and in fact, that much of our leadership and much of our learning has to come, of course, from those most engaged and most directly impacted by this pandemic. And so with that, I just want to say thank you again for those who have really taken a leadership role in all fora, locally, nationally, regionally, globally, because as we invest in each other, one another, it really is a mutual benefit for our societies, ultimately for the world in which we share and the world in which we live. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that, Jacob. I think it was a really good way to wrap up and to give us some inspiration about, you know, where we need to go, the new paradigm of investing in people living with HIV. We have very little time, but I would like to take three questions, and I'm going to commit the panel to stay afterwards, to stand at the back. Please line up behind the mics, and you better be fast, because we only have really time for three, so there are people waiting to get in for the next session. Yeah, because okay, shoot.
Wow.
You first.
Thank you. Thank you
very
much.
Could you please state your name and your question?
Yeah, my name is Agnes Atim from Uganda, a young positive leader. My question goes to GNP Plus, yourself, about a lot of issues that have been raised by almost all the presenters on the usual words that people living with HIV are starting to use, things like succession, things like leaders of tomorrow, things like sustainability. These are words that are always there, and in my country it's even more, that, oh, young people, you're leaders of tomorrow. What plans are in place for all these words we are talking about, both succession, sustainability, and all this? And I also appreciate that I think Lawson mentioned issues, challenges, the known challenges that as people living with HIV we know, like low level of skills. What are we doing about it? Thank you.
Okay, I'll take all three questions at once and then we'll answer them. And I've got a reporter here.
My name is Wilfrido Aguilar from Mexico, and this is not a question. This is a sentiment. In this state from in me since the pre-conference for HIV positive. And it's something I heard there. Someone saying, it is not enough to go to the UN and say, I'm HIV positive. I have a story to tell. And it's something I still cannot digest, and I need to throw it up. Why? Because we know the fight for power. We know that those laws are different from our lives. We fought really, really hard to make our voices heard. Now our voices are going to be shut down. And that is not acceptable. Even if it comes from the UN, from any main funder, we need to let them, our voices, hear. So I really encourage the panel to listen to hear to our voices. Really listen to the people. Otherwise, you are going to be in the United Nations and everywhere representing all of us. But if you don't have a story to tell, if you cannot hear any of the voices from the bottom, you do not represent us.
Well, thank you. Okay, last question.
Christopher Dorset, CRN Plus. My question is directed to Luna. What would you say to prospective positive leaders today, you know, that has great leadership skills and that are still not open to their status? And having received all those positive training, how would you use this training, or has you used this training in your country to enhance, to build positive persons?
Thank you. Unfortunately, I've just been told that we're really short of time. People are waiting to come in, and Violeta is just running out. People who want to contact Violeta can get a card from Pablo Ana Maria. The two questions on leadership are really important questions, and to be honest, the answers have not yet been fully thought through. But it's a priority, I know, for ICW, GMP, and also for the regional networks. And we hope in the next few months to be able to announce some leadership and training opportunities for people living with HIV. Unfortunately, we have to vacate the room now, but all the panel members have agreed to stay a little bit, and we'll stay right outside at the back of the room if you have additional questions for us. I want to thank everybody on the panel. I want to thank all the supporters of Living 2008, and I want to thank all of you for being here and witnessing a positive leadership in action. Thank you.